sure what Mr. Kavitian is doing. And before allowing him to speak, first allow me to, in the name of all of us, wish him again mazal tov. Just became a grandfather once again. And I would like to ask Rabbi Tindler to open with his talk. From what I understand from Rabbi Tindler, the talk this Thursday will be in nature of continuation of this short two-lecture series. So you're all welcome to participate in that lecture as well.
I have already looked up here. The first time I met you here. It's the first time I met you in London. They owe you in furniture. And here today, I don't know anything that closely associated with the OU. It's always good to come to Russia and to the Lion. Difficult place to identify yourself without letters from the dots, etc. I don't know how well the OU Hesha stands up in your time. We'll talk about that too. The topic I chose to discuss with you is most likely the most important ideological problem that faces the young people of our generation. And that is how Torah interacts on the interface with all other knowledges, all other chokhmos of the world. Most of you here, I can recognize, not have the exclusivity of studying only Torah. Most of you were exposed formally to a secular education. Secular knowledge and Torah knowledge cannot be in conflict. Having said that, that doesn't mean that they're not in conflict. They cannot be in conflict. There may very well be a conflict in our personality, because we're taught Torah as a compartment within our lives, recognizing that there is also another aspect of life. And the yeshivas, the chutzpahs at least, a secular department and a Torah department. And regrettably, that departmentalization also becomes part of our excitement. We think that way, and regrettably, we act that way. The second lecture I'm going to give will direct full attention to one of the great constructs of our age, the theory of revolution, and how that impinges upon Torah truths. What I'm speaking about today, science on the interface of halakha, or the scientific basis of halakhic decision making, is really introductory to the third lecture, as you'll see. Therefore, I'd like to lay down certain fundamental principles or axioms. The first is that Kadosh Baruch Hu is not a schizophrenic God. That he has no conflict between science and halacha, between Torah and secular, between body and soul. There's only one God. That one God gave us both. Gave us a Torah designed to instruct us how to act in the world that we call secular. Indeed, maybe we can best sum up our mission in life is to make sure that we act in this world in such a way that everyone who judges our actions realizes that we've sanctified the whole, that we've brought kedusha, or sanctity, to the world, and thus reaffirmed our belief in monotheism. We do not have a God of darkness and a God of light. Yotzer O, Ubo Rechoshech, Ose Shalom, Ubo Re, Ra, is the way the Pasuk has it. God created evil. Because the language just didn't sit well with Chachamim, they changed it to Ubo Re Es Hakol. You can figure it out for yourself. God made good and made everything else. Obviously, everything else, God does not make evil. We make evil. We take God's good and make it evil. But if there's evil in the world, don't create another God to explain evil. Nor do you create a vacuum in the world so that we have an area known as chaos in which God does not function. For a God that does not function in an area of the world is not our God either. For our God is omnipotent and omniscient, knows all and acts in all, and whatever happens, happens because of Kadosh Baruch Hu's will. Hence, we must understand that every aspect of this world is sanctified by Kadosh Baruch Hu's presence. This is the axiom through which we approach science as it impinges upon Torah truth. Actually, it's a pasuk in the Torah. Kadosh Baruch Hu made a world and referred to himself as Elohim. Bereishis Bor Elohim. Elohim means Elohim, the judge. Elohim is Loshon Chol as well. The Nikra Balabayis El Elohim. We come to the judges, one who makes judgments, one who makes laws. Kadosh Baruch Hu made laws, that's all he did. Apples fall down, helium balloons fly up. Both do on mitzvah Hashem. The helium balloon flies up because God commanded it to do so. When the apple falls down, it's because Kadosh Baruch Hu commanded it to do so. No reward is attached to that action because there is no free will, no ability not to listen to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Elohim, the judge, referred to as Elohim, God the lawgiver, functioned for only a short period in world history. Then the Elohim was modified. Beyond Bro Hashem Elohim, Adramah, the day that Hashem Elohim created man. For when man came on the world, he no longer had only God functioning as Elohim through the laws of nature, but now Kadosh Baruch Hu had to deal as Hashem, as a personal God, to put it in a dramatic way, as a God who was controlled by man. For now the control of the world passed to the hands of man, for it no longer reigns when it must reign. It rains when man deserves it to rain. Drought comes because of failure of man to act properly. And Schar Va'onesh, his interpersonal relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyachol, now became a factor both in the scientific world and, of course, the world of the spirit, the world of the soul. And Hashem Elohim is the God that we call Hashem Echad. And therefore, it should be obvious, there cannot be any conflict between Hashem and Elohim. But as I said, we have no schizophrenic God. And if there is a conflict in your mind, it is always due to one of three causes. Either you don't know what Hashem said, or you don't understand Elohim, and either you don't understand what Halacha said, you don't understand what the scientist has thought, or the usual explanation is you understand neither. That has been, unfortunately, the general conclusion you must come to when you read what people write about the so-called conflict between Torah and science, creationism and evolution. Nonsense. That's clear. That's apikousis. The question is a question of an apikousis. How do you resolve the conflict between science and Torah? The conflict between two gods, one who made science and one who gave us a Torah, a god of light and a god of darkness, the devil of Christian theology, and an independent force in the world. What happened to the Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad? One God. Whatever problems we have that one God. Therefore, that cannot be a conflict. That becomes part of the Emunah. That's the article of faith. The Torah demands that we understand the relationship between God and man and between God and his world. Torah, science, Mada coexist in this world. But that's how God intended this world to be. That science presents a problem to people? Of course it does. Because acquisition of knowledge does not come easy. Conviction that there is an intimate relationship that is the will of Kadosh Baruch Hu is the justification for the effort to explain Kadosh Baruch Hu in human terms, the so-called Tamei HaMitzvos, to seek for reasons, rational understanding of Kadosh Baruch Hu's world, because there is an assumption that God dealing omnisciently would not say things that are either irrational to us or irrelevant to us. If I may quote from the Moran Aruchim, third book, Perek Chavov, I translate my translation, a more accurate one, I hope, than what is commonly found. The Rambam says as follows, all of us, the common people, as well as the scholars, believe that there is a reason for every precept. Although there are commandments, the reasons for which is unknown to us, and in which the ways of God is incomprehensible, this does not mean that there is no reason for everything Kadosh Baruch Hu says. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the reason for everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu said, including Torah Aduma, the classic example of the incomprehensible law, the law of the Red Heifer. Shlomo HaMelech already had to admit, I thought I'm smart, but I didn't figure this one out. But that is what drives us forward as a mitzvah Hashem to try to understand Kadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, God didn't have to give us a Torah. He could have given us a computer with a big disk. Not 613 mitzvahs. 613,000 mitzvahs that covers all aspects of our life. He said, Kadosh Baruch Hu entrusted us with the Torah and trusted our integrity and our ability to understand Kadosh Baruch Hu by giving us only 613 mitzvahs that we have to apply to the millions of interactions between man and man, man and God, and man and his world. Rambam continues, there are commandments which are called chukim, like prohibitions of basar v'chalav, meat and milk, shatnas, linen and wool mixtures. There's, look, these are things that people say are not rational, but our sages do not think that such precepts have no cause or reason, for this would lead us to assume that God's actions are purposeless, and that cannot be. On the contrary, they hold that even these ordinances have a cause, are intended for some use, although to us it remains unknown. This is the driving force to understand every aspect of Torah. And to do so, as you all realize, requires us to master the world, for that is the dwelling place of Torah. Torah did not remain in heaven. Kadosh ago who gave Moshe a Torah and brought it down to earth. The Torah had a fine place. He had malachim, angels, who were perfectly content to sit and study Torah all day with Kadosh Baruch Hu. The teacher was better and the students were better. Instead, Kadosh Baruch Hu intended to give us a Torah. A Torah that serves our needs in this world. Many years I had a favorite halakhic Jewish. Gemara Mocha says, Reino la Kadosh Baruch Hu v'olamo ela dalet amos shel halakha. God only has in this world the four cubits of the halakha. Always concerned me, why that expression? Reino la Kadosh Baruch Hu ela halakha. Fine. All that God has in this world is a moral, ethical force, which is encompassed in that one word, halakha, the way the Jew is supposed to behave, the way the goy is supposed to behave. Why the reference to dalet amos? Four cubits refer to a situation, as most yeshiva boys know, that applies to the outside street, where each man, as he stands, has a private property in the public domain, four cubits above him. I interpreted from my Talmidim that this is the message of the Gemara. The Torah that you have in the Kolo, that you have in the Yeshiva, that's not God's Torah. God's Torah was intended not for the Kolo and not for the Yeshiva. It's intended for the Kol Yafo. It's intended for Knesset. It's intended for the diamond exchange. That's where the Torah is supposed to function. Hence, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "My Torah is where you have dalet amos shel halacha, the trus harabim. In the private domain, you don't have dalet amos. You have your domain. Out in the public, there's the chance you have to check whether God's Torah is functional, is viable or not. Can you find for yourself dalet amos with trus harabim, and there make the Torah function? Then it's my Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu said. Otherwise, it's preparatory to something that never was realized. Therefore, suggest something which is certainly chidush, especially in Yerushalayim these days. It's also been chidush already in Muncie these days. That there's a mitzvah to study science. There's a mitzvah to study the world. It's a mitzvah that all Gedolei Yisrael fulfilled in their own way, and which now, regrettably, there seems to be a new spirit of agnosticism or something, in which we do not allow ourselves to understand. And hence, halacha can now be ruled by decree of humans rather than by decree of Kadosh Baruch Hu. Gemara in Shabbos. Strange Gemara. Shabbos Abayin Hei. Omar Rav. Hamoseach chut shel tefilo v'shabbos chayev chatas. If my button would loosen on the Sabbath, and it hangs loose, as you know, and there's a thread, I can pull the thread and bring the button closer to my jacket. If I do that on Shabbos, willfully, after being warned not to do it, the halacha is you'll be put to death for it. That's an act of tefillah. That's an act of sewing. Bringing two pieces that are separate, they bring them close together. And the Gemara continues, good, avod ha-machaber, and connects this with the next statement. Halomi dover echod min ha-magush chayev misa. If you're studying with a magician, magush, a magic, you also get the death penalty. So either take your choice. Either pull on your button string, button thread, or go study with a magician. Vahayodea lechashev tkufos emazolos leinachoshev also lesaper hemenu. And if you know of a Jew who knows how to apply mathematical principles in order to study the astronomical events so as to be able to figure out the months according to the Jewish calendar, and he refuses to do so, then it's forbidden at the halacha to talk to him. Amar Rav Shimon ben Pazi, no, not forbidden to talk to him. It's worse. Here's a man who violates a commandment. For this man does not see the works of God's hands, which means there's a mitzvah to see the works of God's hands. For this man is an evil man, because as Paul Hashem lo yabitu umase yodav lo vo, David Melech uses that to define a Hosha. Amar Rashmu banachmoni Amar Rabbi Yochanan, minayin shem mitzvah ala odom lachashit kufus matos. How do you know it's a positive commandment? You must. Shenemar nishmartem vasisem kihi chochmaschem ubinaschem lehenei ha'amim. For a goy will have respect for you if you can construct a calendar as we did, if you can put up a Nobel Prize winner with a yarmulke, then it will be chochmaschem ubinaschem lehenei ha'amim. Eze chochmo bino shelehenei ha'amim? Well, ethics, of course. What's the greatest wisdom we can teach the nations? Morals and ethics. No. They don't want that. I gotta catch them first. Catch their interest. How do you catch their interest? Zechishub tkufus umazolus. I show you my mastery of mathematics. I can figure out the trajectory of planets. Then you have the heads for me. That's my obligation. To have a goy have respect for me. Ashin says, many of you sitting here most likely think, of course you have to know. You have to know when the gabbai should call out the molid, right? But if you don't figure out, the gabbai can make a mistake. It'll be a sixth halakim instead of seventh halakim, and that'll kill the whole government. But no. The reason for doing it is, from Rashi says, Chokhmah nekenasi shemare simen lidvorov b'chokhmah. What chokhmah? Himu chachamo v'amazolos shemeidim kedvarov sheomer shonazu kshumehi shonazu shtunehi. He can calculate the agricultural yields based upon the study of the astronomical signs. He can calculate for how long this heat wave will continue. He'll be able to tell you when he should buy an air conditioner or not buy an air conditioner. And people will have respect for a weather forecaster who gets it right. The Gemara is telling us, as only the Gemara can, is essentially what I said. There's one world, and God commanded us to master His world. And to master His world is also to poalei Hashem, that lo ro, that people can walk through this world and think the world came about by itself without a Kadosh Baruch Hu. By our devoting our efforts to make the connection, to pull the button thread, to connect the world, make one world out of it, hence the connection of the two things. What does this man do when he studies Kufus Umazolos? He makes one thing out of a disparate world, a world that seems to be flying apart, with turning on one side and science on the other side, in conflict with each other. Comes along a fellow, a Talmud Chacham, and pulls the thread, makes it come together. For that he is Mekayim HaMitzvah. Science needs no defense from a halachic point of view. You have to know how to blacken a pair of tefillin. You have to know how to tan leather. You must know how to make a knife to sheft an animal, to make a bris. Who's supposed to do all that for you? A Shabbos goy is for Shabbos. Not for Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Do something for yourself also. That's obvious. What is less obvious is the assumptions that Kadosh Baruch Hu made that Am Yisrael would accept the responsibility to understand God's world. Understand God's world in such a way as to make Torah an intimate part of his thinking. Not reserved for the shul, not reserved for the school, But there should be no distinction. Because if you don't understand that, you get conflicts. Or if you take something that's supposed to be together and pull it apart, you lose your buttons. And this is what Kadosh Baruch Hu instructed us. Let me give you an example. Our children, for better or for worse, are exposed to the outside world. Some of us decided to move to Muncie in order to reduce the contact with the outside world. But the outside world gets in anyway. There are more restrictive environments, but you cannot keep out the flood, not the flood of knowledge, not the reality of that a world exists that is part of the Dalaramos that you must conquer for yourself. There is a pasuk in the Torah that you all know. Pasuk in Shmini. But it's Baruch Hu instructs Moshe to tell the Jews what they may eat. Kol machveses pasa, pasa v'shosah seshep, shtei brosos, marazgera b'beheima, also tochel. Anything with a split hoof, properly split, split into two toes, and chews its cud, that one you should eat. But hashafan, the rabbit, himal agedol, because it chews its cud, or parcel or yafris, doesn't have a split hoof, tamei hulachem. Vesa neves, and the badger, himal asgeri, because it chews its cud, again it doesn't have a split hoof, to make a hilachem. Don't know what they teach in the Chedorim in Yerushalayim, but most kids have seen rabbits. They not have seen a badger. They've seen rabbits. And if they have a teacher in the secular division who has a particularly vicious streak to him, he will surely point out to the people that a rabbit will not chew his cud. Most of you people sitting here had your Rebbe translate the pasuk that I translated for you, and it didn't bother you. Rabbi told you something you know is sheker, is a lie, and attributed to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Nobody got excited by it, because we have two gods. There's the God who gave us the Torah. And then there's the God who sets up animal farms, the children's zoos. He makes different kind of rabbits. God's rabbit chews its cud. The rabbit in the zoo that the kids handle, and they know something about a rabbit, that it's really a big mouse and nothing more. That rabbit does not chew its cud. Comes along the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Nun Tes Amud Beis. Tana Devei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel taught his Talmidim a little bit of biology. Shalit Bolomo Yodea She'ein Lodovo Shemapris Kapsa Vutamei Elachazir. The ruler of the world, Kadosh Baruch Hu, knew that the only animal that chews his cud and doesn't have a split hoof is the Chazir. Lefichach Poad Ba'akosifu. Know what he's saying? God said there will come a time when people will forget about Maimon Har Sinai. They'll forget about standing at the foot of the mountain. They'll forget about the kolos of Rokim, where all boil ba'esh and the fire on the mountaintop. And they'll question, is there really a God? So Rav Shmuel says, I tell you students, are very simple. Open up Parsha Shmini and point a finger and tell me, find me another animal than the chazir who has a split hoof and doesn't chew its cud. For God said, if I were a phony God, I never would make such a statement that you can catch me on it. Was I in all the jungles of the world? Have I examined all the animals that exist in the world? How do I know there's only one such animal? Because I am Shalit Olam, I made him. I know what I did. And hence it becomes a proof of the existence of God. Tana Rabbi Shmuel, Shalit Bolomo Yodea Sheladobo Maragero Vitame Imo Ella Gomor. The only animal that chooses God and is tummy is only the camel. No other animal that chooses God is tummy. The Pikach Porad Boakosu. Therefore the Pusik listed the Gomor. The Gomor is Malageri, you pass the lower Tusha. Even though you go to the zoo, you see a camel with a split hoof. It's still paso, teflisa, but not state pasos. It's not a two toes, little crack in the bottom of the hoof. It doesn't walk on its toes like a goat or a cow. Kamrashin says, "Ein lochush lemale geir acher." Don't worry about it. There's no other one animal. The kol shal male geir tohovin. All other animals that chew their cud are kosher animals. How about the shofan da nevis? The Torah says it's a tef animal, it's a tummy animal. The problem is not that the Rebbe who translated shofan da nevis, the rabbit and the badger, doesn't know the science, he doesn't know his Gemara. The Gemara and Kul. Moses says there is no animal that chews its cud that is tame except a camel. So Rabbi Shmuel argues with the Torah. He wrote his own Torah. How about Shofan Anevis? Shofan and Anevis are the llama and the vicuna. You never saw a rabbit, never saw a badger. This morning was Rosh Chodesh. Those who didn't run out of shul quickly said Bofi Nashi. And you said Sloim Machse Lashpanin. If you paid attention to what you said. The high mountain, the craggy peaks are the dwelling place of the rabbits. That's where rabbits live. Llamas live there, vicunas live there. And the Gemara says Vesagomo, because Rabbi Shmuel knew his biology. Vicunas and llamas are classified in my biology text as the camelida, the small camels. It's a camel family, that's all that's involved. They're called Shofan, Anevis, and Gomor, three varieties of camel. If you don't know that, then you deny that Kodesh Baruch Hu is Shalit Balomo, because I caught God by a mistake. And therefore he cannot be a true God. I don't need science. Only for science. I better know my science, or else you have to question your Torah, because God boasted, catch me by a mistake. Some year ago or so or more, there was a tumult about a kosher pig they found, the Barbarossa pig. I was quoted with CBS all over the radio. Someone interviewed me, and I said that if indeed that animal chooses cud, well then finding a wedding of my daughter, I'd be happy to serve it at the hospital. It cannot be that it chooses cud. It chooses cud, it's kosher. No problem. Can't have a pig that chooses cud. And if it's a pig that chooses cud and has a cloven hoof, then it's merely a goat with a sawed off face. We read Parshas Pinchas. Some of you need to know my specialty is finding stuff that happened yesterday to apply to anything that I have to do, whether it's a shiur or a lecture. Yeah, yesterday, but Parshas Pinchas a week ago. Since I'm a so-called practicing rabbi, one of these days I'll learn how. The Medrash is are constant with me. Medrash in Parshas Pinchas says as follows. Amar Rav Yudin Bar Simon, as you know, Parshas Pinchas has only two mitzvahs. The mitzvah of Tamidim, to bring two sacrifices every day, to Beis HaMikdash, and the law of Nachlos, the law of inheritance. Also a third mitzvah hidden in there, which has gotten lost, no one knows about it, and that is the mitzvah that comes from the fact that the no slotcha they are referred to by the holy Yichis, Inku and Mochir, Ben Menashe, Ben Yosef. And Rashi says, why Ben Yosef? Because Yosef loved Eretz Yisrael. Hence, since no slotcha wanted a portion of Eretz Yisrael, God listed them to show that they got it honestly. It came genetically to them. The love of Yosef to Eretz Yisrael wouldn't be buried in the time asked them to take his bones off from Eretz Yisrael. It's important to note this on the side, that Yosef's Eretz Yisrael was less religious than the Eretz Yisrael of today. There were fewer kosher shops, there was less Torah studied, there was a more hostile government than we have today, hostile to Torah, and that's the Eretz Yisrael that Yosef loved. That's the third mitzvah that no one wants to hear about anymore. That Parshas Pinchas is talking about Tamidim. They bring down a strange comment. Amar Rav Yudin Rav Simon, Shnei Tamidim Hoyu Yisrael Makivim B'chol Yom. The two animals that they brought for the Tamid Shal Shacha and Tamid Shal Bein Avoyin every day, Hoyu Makivim Oso Al Hagamo. That was the minhag. The two animals were brought in the morning, riding on a camel. V'hoyu ragleihem nogos la'oretz. And the feet of the sheep touched ground. Under the medrash, there are mafoshim. One of them says, lo yadati moko ha'mayma. And Yerushalmi, in Peah, I found gimel, since it interests me, brings the Gemara, as a Gemara, the Sama Rasha, only a Medrash, it's a Yerushalmi. And Tosfos and Menachos, for the better of Pei Zayin Aleph, brings this Yerushalmi, that the sheep were very high, that they used for Tamidim. I call over two of my Talmidim, Kotz Lavitz, who are biology majors, said to them, this Medrash makes sense to you? Of course not, there's some kind of Musa here. Legs, Gleyed must have a special meaning. You have to learn shot differently in the Medrash, etc. Nonsense. Short-legged sheep were developed in England, so you could have short fences to keep them in. Before the 1700s, sheep had very long legs. It was uneconomical to raise that sheep, because to keep them in pasture, you had to build tall fences. So someone mutated the sheep. They found a short sheep, short-legged sheep, a mutant, a crippled sheep, and bred that sheep, and that became the short-legged sheep today, in the time of the Gemara. Sheep had very long legs, they stood very high. They stood almost the height of a camel. Wow. But that's reported in every biology text, one of the classic examples of animal husbandry, of how we've modified it so that we no longer have even a remnant of that original sheep. It's all been lost because of the economic success of the short-legged sheep. What do you gain by knowing that? You gain something very important. You take away that little rot of doubt that's left in the heart of our Talmidim. Maybe the Chachamim didn't know as much as my Rebbe says they knew. Or maybe what the Medrash said or what the Gemara said was guzmo be'alma. A simple exaggeration, for no purpose. Exaggeration for no purpose can't even be called a white lie. An understanding of the world about us, this world that Kadosh Baruch Hu boasted that he is the master of it, he is Shalet Olamo. We cannot understand how to observe Kadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs. What I'm saying should be obvious to you. But the reason for saying is, it is because it is not obvious. because regrettably, there is now the most powerful stream in Yadus is to make a claim that's sheker, that's a false claim. The false claim is that all we need is Torah. And the falsity of that claim is that their concept of Torah is so mitzumtzum, is so contracted, so compressed, as to really mean all we need is a little piece of Torah, not all of Torah. When the Chachamim instructed us, hafochbo, hafochbo, dikulibo, indeed, I don't need anything but Torah. Just make me a mikveh without studying mathematics or hydraulics. Make me a slaughterhouse, I'll pay aloha, without studying metallurgy, without understanding how to raise animals, etc. What is this word Torah that Kadosh Baruch Hu intended it to be? This Hashem Elohim that Kadosh Baruch Hu boasted is the master of all of the world. Without that realization, what's happened is Torah has suffered. You have people who are willing to paskin shailus that are, the psak of which is irrational. Piskei halachis, when people hear it, they don't say, Rakam chocham v'novon hagoy hagadol hazeh, but as the Rambam says in his introduction to Chelek, when they hear these Torah, what he calls them chassidim, who are studying only Torah and take the Torah as their whole life, so something strange has happened, he says. For omrim, they say, Rakam chotom v'sochol hagoy hazeh. There's a mitzvah that we have, mitzvah 614. A goy can hate me, a goy can want to kill me, but when the tumult is over, he knows that wisdom and truth is with the Jew. Go back to my own history. The Rav HaRoshi here had a problem with whether or not to permit swordfish to be sold in Eretz Yisrael. Remember, Rav Grandaba Efrati Zichrono Livracha was in charge of the Kashrus division here. He was matir a swordfish because he wrote away to the U.S. Department of Fisheries and they said, yes, swordfish has scales until the age of two. He cited a Japanese ichthyologist for that source. It didn't take much effort. Some people had questioned, is it really so? I received a request to investigate it from Rav HaRoshi. Then Unterman, that's how. It didn't take long to find out that indeed it's available in the library. Of course it has something that the biologists call scales, defined as glass spicules, little nails that come up with like nails embedded in the skin of the fish. Chachamim knew of different skin covers, integuments above the integument of the fish. A shark has scales. Shark skin is used as an abrasive because of those scales. Sturgeon has scales. But that's not kaskeses of the Torah. For kaskeses of the Torah, the Chachamim taught us what they are. They are kamo shirion, like plate armor, where one scale overlaps the other. And the klefes b'yad over kli, and you can remove it with your fingernail or with a knife running across. Shark skin is used as an abrasive, it doesn't come off. Spicules of the swordfish are part of the bony structure that comes through the skin in the young fish. Not knowing that kaskeses is only two or four kinds of scales, there are four kinds of scales in biology, stenoid, cycloid, glycoid, ganoid, from the biology people they know, only stenoid and cycloid are kosher scales. OU published a list of kosher fishes after my list became treif to them, because I began tagging them on their tuna fish, which I'll talk about in a minute. But yeah, I think the Department of Fisheries.
will mate with a bull, the Vadekpa with a bull, and a chaza will be born. It looks like a chaza, it will be a kosher animal, for it came from two kosher animals. Ayotzing min atol tol. If two chazedim should mate, and what comes out looks like a goat with cloven hoofs and chews its cud, it's a trefa animal, it's a chaza. If two kosher fishes should mate, and a fish is born without scales, it's a trefa fish. For in fish, the scale is the matir. What makes the fish kosher is the scale, not its genetics. And hence in America now, most carp that's grown the way you grow carp here in Israel in ponds are trefa carp, trefa fish. They're called leather carp because they were mutated not to have scales, because commercially it's very, very advantageous to have fish without scales. That's why the halacha demands that for a fish, you need only when you have a full Jew that testifies this fish had scales. Otherwise it cannot be eaten. That's what the Gemara says, that's what the Yedaya Paskins, when the OU began giving Hekshar on tuna fish, Pago Pago, when no Jew ever showed up, or even in Terminal Island in California, where a Jew came in only once or twice a year. Hankins, the friend of the warfare, the great postkin of America. Then my father-in-law, Weissin Zatzal, came out with Iksun, the Nisul Tzosso, to use any fish that the OU approves without the Ashgochet Midas. And the reason that no one can understand, the OU has flaunted that issue all these years, despite my perennial attacks on the OU, and maybe one of the reasons I accepted without hesitation to speak here when I found it was under OU auspices, to make sure that you understand this, my focus is Shem Shemayim. I have only good things to say about the OU, as long as they stay out of kashrus. Friday, this Friday, today is Sunday, today is Monday, Friday in the papers, those who read it, there was an ad from the Rabbonis Havoshis, Lahosir Misho, to remove an obstacle to Halacha. It says, Hinu Laudia, that the tuna, the chicken of the sea, the kutsos, the hesher o you, eina ona al drisha sakashus, shahabonis havoshis li Yisrael. They finally, after all these years, they sent down finally Virabonim to check the OU tuna fish, and they asked the starkest tuna fish before Pesach without putting an ad in the paper because of pressure from our worthy organization, the RCA, the Salas Virabonim. And this time the pressure didn't hold, and for the chicken, the sea, the price, and they're the starkest that came to the soil before Pesach. Had Ashgoth of Rabbonis Haroshis with a new label on there, Bishul Yisrael, to tell you that a Jew was present while it was being made. And the whole packaging took only 4 days. They packed all the chicken in 4 days and went home the way you're supposed to do it. And the chicken, the sea tuna, was imported against the rules set by the Rabbonis Haroshis. Someone flaunted their authority, figuring that they won't take on the OU. Well, Hashem, we have a good mitzvah now as a Rav Roshi, and he wouldn't bow to pressure, and he put this ad. Regrettably, I understand it appeared only in the great Torah journal called Yediyat Achonot, and in Hatzofer. Since I was talking Gush on Shabbos, Gush, I understand the theme is to do the Seder of the week. Twice Mikra Becha Talgum and read the Hatzofet. That's part of the obligation. So I managed to pick it up there. And it made the whole trip there so worthwhile. The fact is, Afi Halochet, anyone who has OU tuna without the special stamp of the Rabbonis Haroshis, that's trefa for fish. Afi Halochet, it is far more kosher to fry your chicken and butter than to eat this, even if you call it the Rabbonis. But the Chachamim asked fish, same as meat. That meat, like meat is Bosra Shana Salam and Ayin, the same halacha applies to fish. Let me give a... examples. And I have, in the course of the last few years, I put together a number of halachic scientific facts that are so intermingled that one cannot exist without the other. Give you an understanding, women will have to excuse me, it's not a topic that particularly interests to them, but men shave with electric shavers. What is the heter to shave with electric shaver? It comes close to the skin. The halacha says that a scissors is permissible, electric shaver is not permissible. The yeshiva boys here know when a new model comes out, they come running to the Rosh Yeshiva. Is it kosher? Is this a kosher shaver? Can I buy it? Panasonic came out with a shaver you can use with lather, with shaving cream. So at least I can feel like a goy in the morning. Is it mutar or asur? So the rabbi takes a look at it. I guess looks. It says there. There's a U on there too, but that's UL. It's United. the Underwriter Laboratories. That's not the OU. There's no way to know if it's kosher or not. How do you know if it's kosher? No, the Rosh Hashiva is Paskin. I don't know why, but they Paskin. They don't know it's safe. That's easy. And no, keep on using the old shit. That I know is kosher. How do I know it's kosher? Because my Rebbe told me it was kosher. And now a Kabbalah. And Sheik Shavers are kosher. Hi, Sheik Shavers are now found only in the museums in Washington. You can't find those models anymore. It's very simple. Ask a physicist. Go ask the fellow who works at the airplane industry here in Lud Airport and ask to test metals for metal fatigue. He'll tell you the difference between a razor and a scissors. A razor cuts and a scissor doesn't cut. A scissor breaks. You know that with a scissor you can cut tin. You can't cut tin with a sharp razor. It's a different force. A different cohesive force is broken by a knife or by a scissors. A scissors bends the metal over its edge and then breaks it. And hence the shiloh of a shaver, is it kosher or not, is what does it do? Does it cut or does it break? What's the test? Is the blade inside sharp enough to cut? A guy who uses a straight blade, how often can he use a straight blade? 5 times, 10 times, he must throw it away. It's no longer sharp enough to cut, and hence it's no longer useful. Yet many of us have had shavers for 20 years, never sharpened, and it cuts. Because it doesn't cut, it breaks. Your knife that you use to cut chicken has to be sharpened regularly. The scissors you have in your drawer for 10 years, you never sharpen it, it still cuts. Because it doesn't cut, it breaks. And suddenly we understand what Kadosh Baruch Hu said. I prohibited a razor. I permitted a scissor. If you imitate a scissor, it's okay with me. A razor not. Why? We don't know why. It's among the chukim. The Rambam gave a reason. You look about you, you see that the goyim are clean shaven. You see that the goyim are clean shaven. They use razors. He claims it had to do with avodah zarah. If the Rambam is right, it's a very interesting thing. When I pick up my electric shaver, it's the same as saying Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. It's a shaila where you have to shave in a bathroom. You have to shave only in shul. If the Rambam is wrong, and he may be wrong, it doesn't change the halacha. A razor is still also, scissors are still mutter. But the Taimi HaMitzvah of the Rambam was his insistence. I said in Mo'on Abufim, I must understand, for God asked me to understand. What I must be careful is to separate my reason from God's commandment. If you don't like my reason, find your own. The commandment is untouched. Commandment is Sibra Hashem, that remains inviolate. You don't like my reason? No good. Make a reason that helps you understand God better. That's a mitzvah to do so. That's called mitzvah from the Torah. That's the learning of Torah, the study of Torah, to make God understandable to us. Let me give you just an example, really, of something that, only because of its current interest, and because on the fly I've thrown some topics I'm supposed to touch upon, so that Zinevah Haas shouldn't think that the OU makes mistakes in areas other than kashrus. I'll just bring you up to date on an interesting thing that I'm sure you picked up in the paper. I received a letter from Dr. Joseph Ben-Ol, Jerusalem District Attorney's Office, concerning a case that's being tried on July 30th before the Supreme Court of Israel. It is to overturn a decision of a district court in Be'er Sheva that a retarded son is to donate his kidney to a father who is in renal failure. The judge in Be'er Sheva said, yes, you can take this retarded 34-year-old son and have his kidney transplanted into his father. He asked if I would analyze it both halakhically and medically for him. I pointed out that halacha is very clear that you are not required to risk your life to save someone else. It must be an act of full voluntary consent, and then only if the risk to you is very minimal and the danger to the life of the individual is maximal. If the danger to you is also significant, it's forbidden for you to risk your life, because it's not your life to risk. But a Bohu who gave you a life and asked you to watch it carefully, or else you're guilty of suicide. And suicide is murder, for which the one who commits suicide will be given the death penalty. In fact, if you can't catch him a second time, is irrelevant to the ethics and morals of the situation. How do you answer such a shaila? Can a family member donate a kidney? Family member with full volition? Well, the shaila has to be resolved by an estimate of risk. Doctors do that regularly. They evaluate risk-benefit to the same patient, risk to surgery versus the benefit to accrue to the patient. The surgeon will not touch a patient until the internist or the cardiologist, quote, clears him for surgery. Why does he have to clear him? Because there's a shaila whether he can withstand the surgery. The doctor, the cardiologist says, yeah, it's a risk, but the risk is worth it. Because without surgery, he'll be in worse shape. Well, how do you evaluate risk-benefit? Api halacha. You will not find it in the other day. You'll find the principles in the other day, and then you have to apply those principles. I went through the medical literature and found that in America, the largest transplant center in Pittsburgh has refused to accept live kidney donors because they felt it's now unethical. The risk was too great to the donor, and the availability of cadaver kidneys, although less successful than live donor kidneys, the availability of the cadaver kidney makes it now unethical to accept a live donor. That's why you made that decision. I went through the literature in European medical journals, and I have 120-odd medical centers. More than half of them have stopped doing live donations for the same reason. Suddenly, we have a shaila whether a man with full volition, voluntary informed consent, can consent to give his kidney. Someone without consent, a retarded individual who cannot give consent, and most importantly, being a shoter, is potur min ha-mitzvos, and doesn't even perform a mitzvah by doing it. Has the mitzvah of samod adam le'echa, to stand idly by, you have to reach out and help, which is the reason we do undertake some risk to help someone else. And hence I concluded that it is forbidden to have this individual subjected to surgery. In light of new findings that have come in this last year, that 10 years down the road, all the old kidney donors who have one kidney are all coming down with high blood pressure. And suddenly we have now a danger to their health, which high blood pressure imposes upon the individual, a real danger to health. And hence, this father who needs a kidney, and if in Eretz Yisrael, regrettably, the people are not donating their kidneys, even though it's a mitzvah, as Rabbi Feinstein wrote almost 20 years ago, it's a great mitzvah to donate a kidney to save someone else's life. And here in Eretz Yisrael, you cannot get kidney donations. Then you send them to England or send them to America, where there's no problem getting cadaver kidneys. There's no shortage of kidneys, a shortage of hearts and livers, but not of kidneys. Add that to the fact of the case, if you read the case in the newspapers, the father just now went on dialysis, and he's good for 20 years on dialysis, the way dialysis is run nowadays. There's just no heter whatsoever to subject this retarded son to the rigors of surgery, the pain of surgery, and the risks of surgery. To do so is to declare something which is really against the halacha, that the claim to life of a retarded man is less than that of a so-called normal individual. And that is the isur of isur. But that denigrates the human image, the tzelem Elohim that this son has as well as the father. As you recognize, there are many, many, many other topics that will hold a popular interest, but not as much, I think, as the interest in getting home finally and getting out of this hot room. I'll therefore just cut it short at this point and conclude with something from this week's Seder, the Medrash, the beginning of Parshas Torah, that begins, Halacha, there is a Halacha, Adam Yisrael Ma'u Shiyemuto Lo Lichto Sefer Torah B'chol Asher. Can you write a Sefer Torah in a language other than Hebrew? And the Gemara and the Medrash concludes, Kan Shanu Chachomim, the Gemara and Megillah, that this is the difference between Sefer Torah and Tefillin and Mezuzah. Tefillin and Mezuzah must be written only in Hebrew, but a Sefer Torah can be written in any language. Gamaliel says, not true, it can only be written in Yevonis, only in Greek. And it says, Yaptel Kim Liyepes, Yishkom Baal Leishem, the bracha that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave to Noach to his sons. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, Yapte l'kim l'yefes v'yishkan v'olishem. Olishem is Torah, Yefes is Greece. And hence there's a connection between Greece and Torah, and that's why Chacham committed Greek. The Rambam says, because it's a language that lends itself to exactitude. That's the halacha. I'd like to suggest, Chachamim taught us that Torah can be written in all languages. What I really meant to say is Torah has to be spoken in all languages. Unless you can give a biology lecture and someone walks away and says, he taught me Torah then, or a chemistry lecture, or a lecture of psychology, which is the one anti-Torah science that we have, but there's too much effort to equate the human and the infrahuman in behavior science. Unless you can see that the language of the Dalet Amoshe Halacha, the language that you spend most of your life in, is a language of Torah, Kadosh Baruch Hu has failed in its mission. The mission of giving over Torah to a nation. And we, of course, have failed in our mission. Accept the Torah and make a bit of way of life. Thank you.
And the way I had always understood the halacha, it is also to donate body parts, I don't know, because of kavod hamet, or I don't know what the actual thing is, and
the greatest kavod hamet is to save a human life.
So
Since all mitzvahs of the Torah are given only to preserve human life, as you know, Kruach Nefesh is doche all mitzvahs of the Torah, except for three. And donating a kidney is neither idolatrous, adulterous, nor is it murder when it occurs after death. And hence, simply put, it's a great mitzvah, and if there is an attitude that's been promulgated, that the Tuach Nesim, that the cutting up of a dead body is a desecration, but letting a live man die is the greatest desecration.
Does that apply also to other organs?
Yes. Send up, allow.
Earlier in your talk, you brought an example of what people consider an apparent conflict between science and halakha, and that people are mistaken the Arnevis and the Shapani. I'd like to bring another example from a slightly different point of view. The Gemara says that lice.
Spontaneous generation.
Right. All questions spontaneous.
Okay. You sense that is most likely one of the big so-called conflicts, halakhic, etc. I decided to include that in my evolution lecture. To take a little bit of background, get the people understand the aspect. We got the Melacha Shabbos, Holy Kina, Holy Tavosh, etc. So if you're interested, you can show up on Thursday. You mean the grid, the grid or the mesh?
Yes.
Right. That's not true because, as all the people who shave know, after you shave, you put on alcohol and it'll burn your skin. There was a grid between your skin and the knife, then it would not irritate your skin, obviously. The irritation of the skin is due to the fact that the skin is pushed into the grid, and hence, not only does it chop off the hair, it chops off the top layer of skin as well. So it's not the closeness of the shave, it's not the directness of the contact with the skin. The only explanation that makes sense is the difference that I gave between breaking and cutting.
Two practical questions. Are there some razors, can you name them, that are acceptable and some that are not? Lecture.
The Braun shaver is not acceptable for two reasons. Once, it has really a very sharp blade that cuts before it breaks, and second, it's made in Germany.
How about Philips, mate? How about Philips, Norelco?
All the Norelcos I've seen are okay.
And the other mundane question is that tuna fish. I didn't understand. If it has a UO, but it must have also...
As a UO, it means that the OU has accepted... See, that's the difference in how we look at it. They call it the UO, and I call it the OU. They owe you an explanation for what they do. OU Hesh is based on a letter from the company that they're using tuna fish. They could be using shark, they could be using any other fish, there's no way of knowing. But that's not the reason why it's also. Even if I knew 100% that the goy is an honest goy, the halacha says he's not honest. Halacha says that you have to have witness. And when the witness sends the witness, when an ed kosher sends the tuna, it needs two simonim. They have two simonim associated with it to identify it as the original package which was sent out from his hands. That's halacha. Moses says it, Papa Paschal, by the way, no one argues with it. All the achonim reaffirmed it and attacked the OU personally. I was thinking in the yeshiva world in America, no one uses an OU fish. The product, Dogim, had no great patent on tuna fish. They go up for 4 or 5 days. That's all it takes. Right into this, the stock is plant. You finally asked me, and that's when we found out there were other problems. They were making cat food using the dark parts of the tuna, mixing it with animal liver in the same tail in which they were making the tuna fish, and using the same retorts, etc. That company, Starkist, Terminal Island, was putting out 1,100,000 cans a day.
shipped a lot of it here.
Yeah. Only when I can say to the Jewish trade in New York, Boston, Yerushalayim, etc., you need 2 or 3 days of production to flood the Jewish market. And if they did that and put the OU just on those few days when Mashiach stood there and watched it, there'd be no problem. But instead, they decided to go for the so-called annual Hashgachah. And this has really hurt their reputation greatly in Kashrus. So that now, unfortunately, in America, and of course, it's no compliment to America and not to Yerushalayim, the sign of a kosher cater is I don't use OU Hashgachah products. That's a tragedy. So the OU has been one of the great accomplishments of American Jewry in every aspect. And now I believe, with the help of the Avodah Zarah, this is the last thing I think finally will straighten out that mess.
Just getting back to Shachman on Rabbit. And when Rabbi translates it as a rabbit, he knows the difference between a rabbit and a llama. I mean, rabbit is two little ears, things, nose and things, and a llama is a little bit bigger. And how is it shayach that such a mistake in translation?
How is it shayach that you reach the age you reach, then go back to that Rebbe and ask him, what did you do to me?
Maybe now I will.
Okay, then yeah. You made me doubt the existence of God. That's what the law says. Shalit Balomo, test my existence. If I'm wrong, find me an animal and prove me wrong that I'm not a God.
That's not what I'm asking.
Where the Rebbe got it from his Rebbe.
How can this mistake occur? It's
not my responsibility.
An apple doesn't look like
it's not my responsibility. But I have also an interest in such things. So I did do my investigation. And I found in 1880-something, Robin in Germany published a little sefer, Shadows and Truths. And in there, in one of the truths, he mentions what he thinks to be the origin of the Esau. He knew very well then that a shofar on Eves, he said, is not a rabbit, but is something related to the Gamal. Didn't find that Gamal that I found that speaks of Gamal clearly as the only exception, so we know that that's the proof for it. But he says that in Germany, the word for a rabbit is ahoz. In Arabic, ahoz is a llama. And he claims that's where the error came in, that someone translated hoz, the Arabic translation, Rebbe as father should have been taught. Hoz, everybody knows what a hoz is, it's a rabbit. And that's how the hoz became the rabbit. But that's true or not, I cannot say, but I said I was also furious as you are. I tried to find some explanation for so gross an error. But the important point is that you know darn well that Father Goff didn't make a mistake. That's not true. That the Torah method is not, I believe, and science I know, but far more Torah is I know and science is I believe. There is so much of science that we accept because someone else told me it. I never did the work myself. When it comes to Torah, I force you to master Torah all by yourself, find out for yourself. The fact that I know doesn't justify your accepting it because I said so. There are facts of science that are assumptions that we have not proven. For example, the Bohr atom, which was the basis of physics and gave us the nuclear age, is sheker v'chazor, it's a lie. It was an assumption that people made to explain certain phenomena. And now we know it's not true. It was useful during the period of time. So we make constructs that are not true. Yet I taught it in my biology classes, the little bit that I teach of molecular biology. You taught those nucleus, electrons running around it, and baloney, sheker v'chazor. In Torah, the goal of Torah is to reduce as much as possible belief to knowledge. Then there are fundamental beliefs, which to those who believe are the same as knowledge. Belief in Kodesh Baruch Hu, Torah ben Hashemayim, every word of the Torah, certain things that are by all tradition, halacha lo shrisina, that are absolutely true. How do I know that? I know that also by a certain level called knowledge in my eyes, my understanding. I know my father, Zatzal, was not a liar.
and Enoch the Mo Shekel Abanov. His father didn't lie to him, and his father didn't lie to him. And therefore, Maimon Har Sinai involved 3 million people standing at the foot of a mountain, not three shepherds going to Bethlehem. And these people didn't lie to their children. And as the Kuzari says, that's the proof that we have. That's empiric proof. That's not belief. Torah is based on knowledge. Science is largely belief, as you see. The belief in the theory of evolution, besides the willful perversion of scientific facts, as we'll see, just doesn't exist. Okay, we'll take just one or two more, and that's it.
You said one of your statements just now that saving the life of a person is one of the greatest mitzvahs of any great deed.
What, I'm sorry?
Saving the life of a person. Now, as you realize, I don't understand this yet to me, but it's fully explained to my local government in Jewish law. As far as I'm concerned, we are permitted to donate blood. Right? Now, what is the situation when we need a kidney, as you said, and we need an eye or something like this to be able to keep on doing, or some other part of the body, that the person that so-called died? Why is it so difficult in this country to make a sort of
The Arabs don't give either, and they be part of Middle East tradition, superstition about the death. The Jews is because, unfortunately, the rabbis are not encouraging them to give. Feinstein Zatzal in the tshuva to Rabbi Weiss, when he was governor of Manchester, the Nabav of the Eidah Chedis, the head of Adats, he was interested in Chedim Beis the other day at the very last tshuva, and there was Weiss of Manchester. Well, the Rabbi Feinstein says very simply, it's a great mitzvah to give part of the body of the dead. And when Rabbi Weiss had written to him and said, but members of the family have great sorrow, they're greatly anguished by the thought that their loved one is being cut up. Are they required to undergo that pain? And Rabbi Feinstein answered him, the mitzvah is not to have any sorrow when you save any human life. That tshuva no one is quoting in the newspapers. They quote those truths in newspapers. They will develop an attitude which says what the Torah wants you to say, that saving a human life is indeed the greatest mitzvah, and the notion that you're desecrating a human body by saving a human life runs contrary to every aspect of Torah. Dr. Sherman.
I think that the real issue, as you started out on apparent conflict between science and religion is probably the most pressing conceptual problem. However, I think that the issue is not a factual one, as you've demonstrated, or even a methodological one, as I think was perfectly answered. I think it's a value question. I think the real issue is the values of religion versus the values of science. I think that where the conflict comes in is the value of science, that we only accept things that are verifiable and repeatable. I think the fact that we deal with values of equality, notions of equality, unlimited pursuit of truth. And I think that you could probably continue the list even better than I can. When you deal with these fundamental valued assumptions, I think that this is where the conflict begins. And your presentation, at least, or perhaps time would allow, you did not touch on this, but I think that this is the real issue.
I believe that that is really a false issue. Science has no values. Only the scientist has values. I can teach evolution and make of someone a mamin b'Hashem, or you teach evolution the way it's being taught now, to make one a kofa b'Hashem. Values are given two facts by the individual's interpretation of those facts. If I go ahead and I show that there are common behavior patterns between animal and man, and therefore I say, well, therefore, Musa ha'odom and abeheim ha'oyin. Therefore, man, work harder to get away from the animal and earn your position as man. That's known as a Musa shmus. If I say, well, therefore, it's instinctive in man, and man should follow his natural instincts, and dogs commit homosexual acts, that's why men can commit homosexual acts, then I take man and make him below the level of animal. Those are values that degraded man puts to the facts of science. It's not inherent in the science itself.
But the scientific community does espouse to those values.
That's why, Baruch Hashem, we now have a total scientific community that doesn't espouse those values. Thank you.